Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Top of the morning to you. Welcome to it. The weekend edition is here. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine. We are loaded for this Saturday morning. A lot of news in the world of college football, specifically with Bob Stoops saying goodbye on Wednesday. Yeah, that is a shock. And Lincoln Riley has the keys. A great write-up by Brandon Vogel of Hail Varsity on, power programs, blue blood programs that how have they fared? And about 53% of the time, the coaching change doesn't work. Whether it's a guy in waiting or you bring in a new guy, it's usually the guy who follows the legend, third in that string of coaching changes, that has kind of steered a blue blood back to power, back to relevancy. We'll see how Lincoln Riley does. Our favorite Pirate, Mike Leach, we spoke with him on Wednesday. He, I won't say recruited, but he had had Lincoln Riley on his staff. He had him in his quarterback room. And, of course, Leach, a hired by Bob Stoops from Kentucky to Oklahoma that first year they were in Norman. It's amazing what Bob Stoops has done. Some say he should have done more. I think
I would agree with that. Honestly, I think on the whole, look, he's a good coach. He's an all timer. You know, he's up there. He deserves a statue of some sort somewhere. Right. I don't think it needs to be right on the steps of OU Stadium. You could say with a straight face that he did not. I don't think he got the most of what he had. I really don't. Like, over the course of time, he was there, 18 years?
Yep.
He wins a national title in, what, was that his first year, second year, third year?
Year two.
Year two. And that's the last one? And then when he would get to the big day, he got boat raced.
Yeah, boat raced once, and he lost by 10 and 7 the two other times. Here's what I'm saying about Stoops, though. There were a couple of other years he had title opportunities. One was 06 with Rhett Bomar and the whole car dealership thing. He lost his quarterback and had to put a wide receiver in at quarterback. And then the other year was 09. Sam Bradford, his junior year, he gets destroyed by a BYU linebacker down in Jerry World. And then it's Landry time. And that OU team didn't finish well. So I think his consistency was tremendous. You had a rise in the rest of the Big 12, i.e. Baylor and TCU, started being really, really good, which limited more Texas talent. He had so many offensive weapons. He had the McCoys of the world and the Roy Williams of the world defensively. So I think all in all, for him to last at a place like Oklahoma 18 years and probably probably average around an 8 to a 10 spot when they finished the year, he's the last guy to double digit Nick Saban. They did that a couple, 3 years ago. So I think he deserves a ton of accolades. They don't like that he played in four championships and only came away with one. I get that, but there was some ups and downs, and he kept reloading. He even blew out his entire staff 3 years ago to go younger, and that takes some guts to implement the air raid offense. And this kind of got me to thinking a little bit. We'll get into a good story by Sam McEwen in a little bit as well regarding Tanner Lee, just how the offseason's going, some of the goals for Nebraska. But there's been moments, and this also ties a bit in, not just with Oklahoma and Sooner Magic, but also with what Cleveland did last night in the NBA Finals, because if I was a betting man, Mark, I would have put Junior's College Fund on the fact there's no way Cleveland responds after that heartbreaking loss in game three. Right. Yeah. And not only did they respond, they were incredible. I mean, they played, they set the blueprint for how they're going to make history if they make history.
They had 86 at halftime.
No, I know. We were watching that, and I'm just like, my Lord, that's incredible.
But so, think of how many times Nebraska scored 86 in a game.
Or not. or not. Different level of basketball.
I know, and shot clock, whatever.
But moments in football that you think of as a Nebraska fan where either you thought Nebraska was left for dead, or the other side of it, where you thought Nebraska had this thing in the bag, and it was heartbreak. Can join us this morning, can tap the line, Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House, 466-3776, 466-3776-800-825-5865. Also, take us with, if you're out and about, a lot of baseball going on in town this weekend with the ESPN 1480 app. And Mike Leach in about 20 minutes or so. So, Kranak, you were at one of those games that, you know, you left Nebraska for dead. And I'm thinking of that 09 Missouri game where you're down 12, but 12 seemed like 21. And Nebraska exploded in a fourth quarter where they hadn't scored all game. I think of the Ohio State game. Back in the first year of the Big Ten, even that Wisconsin game, year one of the Big Ten, and to kind of put a bow on this Oklahoma-Nebraska thing, the last Big 12 championship Nebraska participated in when they went up 17-0. There's been so many instances where, man, you just don't think this team has enough to come back, or you think the other team is not just down by the throat, but they're hemorrhaging from the throat. And that's what makes sports awesome, and that's what's kind of romantic when you think about Oklahoma and Nebraska, and too many times, unfortunately, with Sooner Magic on the other side of things for Nebraska, where there was truly some miracle comebacks in that series.
Yeah, and it's, you know, with Bob leaving, that's one of the last, and it wasn't even that strong of a linkage. That's kind of one of the last linkages between Nebraska and Oklahoma. You know what I mean? Like he was the last. I don't know. There's no longer really any connection there. Haven't played him in. So there's not a single player on the Oklahoma or Nebraska roster that have played each other. It's not a coach that's coached against each other on either side. It's a totally. You know what I wonder about with Bob? I wonder if part of him got. I'm serious here. I wonder if part of him got sick of the kind of football he was watching. Like, did you watch the Oklahoma-Texas Tech game last year?
You mean where it was 65-59?
It was the most disgusting football I've ever seen. I was really, that was one of the first times, you know, you hear a lot of the talk of, oh, they're just, you know, pretty soon it's going to be two-hand touch football. And they're taking the physicality out of the game. I've always heard those complaints, but
Coach,
I still see big hits all the time, right? Like you're just kind of like
doing pretty good.
Oh, it's still a physical game. That game, I really started to question it. I was really like, is this football's future? Because if it does, it sucks. I do not want to watch it. I mean, it does not even resemble the same sport when you compare it to like the Nebraska-Wisconsin game last year. Like, compare the Nebraska-Wisconsin game and how the sport is played versus how that Oklahoma-Texas Tech game was played. Dude, it was like arena. I mean, it was terrible.
It was air raid-esque, and there's no answer for defense. I mean, that's where they live. And Stoops is a defensive
horrible
guy.
I can't imagine he's a defensive guy.
Yeah.
This guy was he's an all-Big Ten corner, right, at Iowa?
I think so.
So he's a defensive guy. You know, he was a D coordinator at Florida. He values defense. And in the Big 12, you know, you have to adjust, right? You have to kind of open up the offense. And he did that early. He was one of the early guys opening it up, obviously, with Hiron Leach. But I got to imagine part of his soul died that night. They were showing him on the sideline during that game. And he just did not look like a happy human being. He looked miserable. I think he was just like, what is this? What am I watching? Why am I doing this anymore? If there is ever an interview with him, I wonder if they would ask him about that. I would love to ask him about that. Be like, what were you thinking that night?
Do you remember the first time you met Bob Stoops?
Hmm.
I do. That was with you.
Yeah, that was, God, that was the
big 12 media days. Probably my second junior year and your senior year. And
Bud Lights. He brought Rocky Kalmus and
he had Bud Lights. After it all kind of shut down that evening in one of the conference rooms, he's drinking beer with two college kids and the rest of the established media.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, it's. You know what I also wonder, too? There was a part of me, at least immediately when it happened, I was like, I wonder if he takes over at Bama. I have no idea why.
No.
I have no idea why, but who knows how much longer Saban has. Saban, much older.
Yeah, Nick's going to be 66, and he still feels good, and no one's...
Not right now.
No, Bob's going to be 60 in 4 years, okay? And he's going to take 2 years off. He'll either give an NFL shot... or he'll seriously consider Notre Dame because that's closer to home. Part of me in the back of my mind thinks maybe if the Iowa gig ever opens up, he might look at that. But it's a young man's game now as well. And if you're not a young head coach, you better have a young staff. Okay. So we'll just see. I think you're right on with what am I watching now? The frustration.
I'm serious.
Of defense in college football. The Big 12 landscape is basketball on grass, and they kind of started that, but they've, like many, have not adjusted to it. It's really hard to stop because all your skilled dudes are on offense. So it'll be interesting to see where Oklahoma goes. And I was talking about this week, Kranak, and in 4 years, Nebraska and Oklahoma will meet in Norman. It's the 50th anniversary of the game of the century. Which program will be further along? Meaning, will Nebraska be at where Oklahoma's at right now? Will Oklahoma maintain where they're at? Will Oklahoma dip? Will Nebraska dip? Will Nebraska still be 9-4? In 4 years, that'll be a pretty cool little benchmark to see. All right, this is the year they made the change to Lincoln Riley. This is year three for Coach Mike Riley. And you have kind of your prototype in there offensively from a quarterback. You have three quarterbacks on your roster now that do what you want to do. So how far forward do the programs move? Do they regress? Do they stay the same? And in 4 years... it'll be interesting to see because that'll be the non-conference game for Nebraska. And I know Nebraska and Oklahoma fans will just be jacked about that down in Norman.
Do you think Riley will still be – I have and not because I think he's going to get fired or whatever, but do you think he's still here?
Absolutely.
Do you?
Absolutely.
4 years from now.
It can't get bad.
Yeah,
but the way they're going about things, that's not their plan. Obviously, to be bad, they want to be better. And with the recruiting and the talent and the perceived development, I don't know if Diaco will be. I mean, time will tell. I don't know, man. I don't have a crystal ball. I just don't think in 4 years, if you have another coaching change at Nebraska or even at Oklahoma for that matter, you're both in a major world of hurt.
Yeah. At least with Oklahoma, though, they are going to have that continuity thing, which helps a little bit short term. And look, Lincoln Riley's hot commodity. He would have been offered a job somewhere else anyways. So yeah, why not keep him?
He was probably gone after this year. Is do it now or not at all?
Yeah. So, you know, so in that respect, I don't know. I would imagine he's still there for sure. Who knows what's going to happen with the Big 12? And what that will require them to do. I don't know. I just get the feeling I just can't see Riley here for like 10 years. For whatever reason. I just don't see it happening. He's going into year three. He's one of the older coaches. He's been coaching a long time. It's almost like if you take the macro view of it, is he more or less the program stabilizer?
Nah.
You know what I mean? Will he just be kind of the stabilizer to then hand it off? And who knows? He could hand it off to even like a Danny Langsdorf.
See, I don't think he is. Yeah, he wants stabilization, but he also wants that title shot he's never had a chance to follow through on. He's been close a lot.
Yeah, no, I think he wants to win. I don't think he's trying not to, you know, I think he wants to win. But I think Nebraska is kind of far from that.
Possibly.
Don't they seem like it to you? I mean, really, you know, they're just.
You just don't know.
Well, no. I mean, you look at Ohio State and Bama. Mm-hmm. You look at the kind of cream of the crop and where Nebraska is compared to that.
Yeah, but I look at Oklahoma, though, and Oklahoma's a far cry from that, too. I know they were in the college football playoff in the initial year, but they got whacked by Clemson by 20.
I see.
So, I mean, you've got four programs, right?
I just can't get over I cannot get over how this fan base is going to respond to 2018. Look.
Can we eat what's on our plate in 17?
I got it. I know. I get it. Yes. But I just cannot help but look forward. It'll be year four for Riley. Year four. So right away, there are built-in expectations. This is your program. This is your team. There is no reason why you're not amazing. And you are at Michigan. You are at Wisconsin. You are at Northwestern. You're at Ohio State. You're at Iowa in the same damn year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and so chances are, Nebraska's not going to roll through that schedule, right? The chances are, even if they're stockpiled with a bunch of talent, put it this way, if they do, Riley's getting a statue. If Nebraska somehow goes undefeated that year, or maybe loses one and gets to the Big Ten title game and wins the conference with that schedule, legend. Instant legend.
Krainak, that's why he moved. Okay,
I get it, but I'm just saying, think forward to how this fan base will respond when, in all likelihood, that year is maybe an 8-4, probably.
If he goes
in his fourth year,
if he goes 8-4 the next 2 years, and you cease the 62-3s, and you turn him into worst case 37-21s. That's progress, and that hurts to say. That sounds like I'm lowering the bar.
That's what I'm saying. Do you think this fan base will be okay with that?
Listen, this fan base is as bright as it gets when it comes to knowing football. Do you agree? The expectations are magnificent. That said, the fan base can look at Ohio State and go, wow. The fan base can look at Michigan and go, wow. So I think you count beating either one of those programs at their joint or in Lincoln as pretty major accomplishment. It's probably in that same vein as beating a Colorado or an Oklahoma or a Texas, okay? It's that type of pelt you put on your wall. Mm-hmm. I think the immediate expectation, stop losing to Iowa, beat Wisconsin, start splitting with Wisconsin. And it seems like you're closer to Wisconsin now than you have been since you've been in the league. Take care of the West and let the chips fall. Take a title shot with the East. Not necessarily in the regular season, but get in position to try and do them in Indy.
I agree. That's what the expectations are.
Mm-hmm.
That 2018 schedule will not allow that, which will be year four. Now, again, if it does.
Okay, let me ask you.
If Nebraska somehow breaks through with that schedule, seriously, Riley is a legend.
The opportunity's there. That's what kind of excites me. I'm not looking at next year or 18 as, oh, God, it's going to be 3-9. I'm looking at it with, okay, where's your recruiting classes ranked?
No.
How much are you developing? Do you have your quarterback? Do you have your defense?
Yeah.
And if you build it up and get it set, stand up and go toe to toe with them. I mean, you're in a better situation theoretically. The more time you have to develop to be ready for it. I look at it as a phenomenal opportunity for Nebraska because it is that window to showcase not just to the rest of the league but the rest of the country. I mean, you want to talk about relevancy? It's ready-made for you.
Hey,
don't fear it. Don't fear it.
Brother, I agree. And I'm not saying it should be feared, and I don't think Nebraska is going to go 3-9. What I'm saying is, how will this fan base respond after year four of Riley in what all likelihood looks like an 8-4? That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, totally. The opportunity's there. Do everything you can. Build up the program. Go get yourself some W's in Ann Arbor and Columbus.
And listen, if
easier said than done.
If the losses are closer to overtime in Madison, the fan base will be wanting a win, yes, but they'll be, I think, respectful of how you competed. Because at the core, that's what's most important to Nebraskans, I believe. How are you going about your business? And if you get beat by a better team, so be it. But don't get embarrassed because you don't look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and how long have we been saying that?
And
I think that was pretty telling in Sam McEwen's article today, by the way. This is totally related, where Luke McNitt was quoted, said something along the lines of, hey, we have told the strength coaches to not let anything slip. Because we need to be, and then Tanner Lee said something along the lines of, we need to be confident as all hell. Like, respect your opponent, but don't be scared of
exactly.
them. That quote jumped out at me. He said, respect your opponent, but don't be scared of them. It's like, yeah. So to me, he observed people being scared during his redshirt year.
Yeah, you could see body language not being real great against Ohio State even.
Think about that. Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Got to learn to win big games, man. You got to do it to learn it. So,
like, yeah, try not to be scared. That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
Well, don't be scared.
Comes to a mindset. The Saturday edition of Hail Varsity Radio off and running. We have been on air for now 27 minutes. That's an accomplishment I'm going to smile about. That is a good thing. The Pirate Mike Leach is coming up. Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt. If you're out and about today, go find your friends at Sauter-Hayman, Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, only at Sauter-Hayman, 100% real diamonds, except they're grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. Pure-grown diamonds, all the characteristics of earth mine diamonds. They're eco-friendly, and they are 10 to 40% less than traditional earth mined diamonds. It's a good thing. And maybe an anniversary or birthday's around the corner for Mama Bear. Go see Rick and your friends at Sauter-Hayman and see why the pure-grown diamonds are some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter-Hayman history. 12th and O downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion Lincoln, or out west with your friends at Sauter-Hayman in Grand Island. Sauter-Hayman.com. Gary Sharp is less than an hour away. Brandon Vogel, a Hail Varsity next hour, a quick timeout. And then we'll have the rewind with our favorite Pirate, Mike Leach, on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Hello.
Coach, how we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm on the road. Hopefully I don't have dicey reception, but we can give this a sure, but it may work.
Well, we'll let it ride. Mike Leach with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, Washington State head coach. And coach, I was prepared to ask you about how summer's going, but I got to get your reaction to Bob Stoops announcing his retirement.
Well, I just heard 5 minutes ago and I'm surprised by it.
What surprises you the most? His reasoning, you know, ready to go live life. He's 56. He's put in darn near 20 years. You coached with him, and he hired you. Do you think he just needed a break, and this is a quick reaction, or do you think he's out for good?
Not Bob specifically, but football coaches in general retire very poorly. They're very poor at retiring, and a lot of them take several tries before they actually retire for a while, come back, retire, and some cases get depressed. A few guys have retired well. I always thought Spike Dykes did a great job of retiring. Every time I saw Spike, he was lighter, his hair was darker, and he was and happier. And it's like he and I were going two different directions. And he, one day, told me about his schedule. They had golf day, they had barbecue day, they had poker day, and he is happy as could be. And so I guess hopefully it works out that way for Bob. I mean, and as I'm sitting here kind of trying to imagine what he's going to wake up and do every day, and I can't say that I know exactly what that would be. And you know, hopefully he's got a good plan and goes and has fun with it. The other thing about it is, if he decided to come back sometime, I'm sure he would be able to. Not at OU necessarily, but, you know, back into the game. And but, yeah, I am kind of surprised. The timing's kind of funny, too.
Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, what do you remember about working for Bob and that hiring process? Your offense was phenomenal at Kentucky, and you brought your offense to OU, and the rest is kind of history with what you guys did down there.
It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun working with him. He's a very down-to-earth guy, very basic, very fundamentals. And then, of course, the other thing that was kind of exciting, there were a lot of great coaches there that went on to have really good careers. And just, and I'll be honest with you, we kind of, and I think I speak for a lot of those guys, kind of felt like we're on the ground floor of, you know, a pretty good group of guys that were going to go on to do good things. And but it was a fun staff to be a part of. And you know, I got hired right away at Texas Tech, but you know, and you know, you can't be everywhere at once. But, and as happy as I was to be at Texas Tech, you know, I always sort of wished I had a longer time at OU. You know, I mean, again, I wouldn't trade the opportunity I had to go to Texas Tech, despite the fact that they haven't paid me for 2009, which, you know, in pretty much any third world country that exists, that's, you know, that's stealing and that's robbery. Because they did win 9 games that year, and they haven't won 9 since, so you'd think they ought to pay me my salary that we negotiated, agreed on, shook hands, and signed, but they haven't. But nevertheless, there were great people at Texas Tech, and we did some great things. And, you know, and so, but, you know, it was a lot of fun there at Oklahoma. And of course, working for Bob was good. You know, it was a good dress rehearsal for me because, you know, Bob had had a great defense. At Florida, they had the number one defense in the SEC. At Kentucky, we had the number one offense in the SEC. And so we decided to join forces. And, you know, in hindsight, to watch Bob step in, be first-time head coach, and then I do it, you know, 1 year later, I think it was, you know, a pretty good example for me as I saw kind of, you know, the ups and downs and what you kind of work through, you know.
Mike Leach, few minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Reaction to Bob Stoops' retirement at Oklahoma. Well, you had a chance to be at a high-profile program and then get your shot as a head coach and did great at Tech. A kid you really care about that was a student assistant for you, Lincoln Riley, is going to get the reins now. Tell folks a little bit about Lincoln, your relationship, what he was like at Tech, and now what he's stepping into at Oklahoma.
Well, Lincoln was a real smart guy, and when I hired Lincoln, he was the youngest full-time assistant in America. So he started out as a student assistant, then he became a GA, and then I put him on full-time. And even though he was a young guy, he logged a lot of time with me, and so that's kind of what I felt like counted. And, you know, did a good job, great student of the game, a very clear-thinking guy, was a tremendous guy to bounce thoughts off of, thought independently, and you know, and as I have throughout his career, I wish him the best.
I think he's 33 now, and do you expect, not that he will or won't, but a guy that age with that type of program, is he going to need to reach out, or do you think he'll reach out to guys like you, mentors, with this new responsibility?
You know, that's difficult to say. I suspect maybe at times. I always did, and I've always been I'll reach out to the janitor or a stranger on the street, and hey, what do you think of this? And I'm not saying I always agree, but I'll want to see the reaction and see if they bring up something I haven't thought of. But I always did. Can't say if he will or not for sure. Wouldn't surprise me. And we're in contact with one another, and certainly anything I can help him with, I'd be happy to do it.
Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, what else have you been up to? Are you doing any camps this time of year? Are you thinking about a little time down in Key West? What's your schedule like?
Our staff's doing a bunch of camps, you know, as many as we can cover. And the new camp rule where it's going to be at a school, I think it's a little silly. They ought to open it up like it was before. Summer hasn't really started for me. We'll freshmen will come in here in a week. And this week will be kind of busy. I got a daughter graduate, a son coming home. I got, that stuff. I guess I feel like my summer is going to kick off around June 22nd, but we got the off season going full swing. Some guys, playing hard, working hard, and we got most people back. Actually, we will this year and next year for the most part. So we just got to steadily improve. But there's the phone rings throughout the summer, but I haven't successfully really gotten out of town for any long term yet.
Well, I'm sure you'll have a full slate down at Key West. Wanted to talk to you about quarterbacks, and it seems like, Coach, each year it's that the recruiting process continues to speed up, and you're having to programs in general are having to look at quarterbacks at a younger age, or you're going to have to identify it at an earlier date, maybe a year earlier, especially with the new recruiting and early signing period that's been approved. I want to get your thought on that new signing option in December, and also when you scout a kid at that quarterback spot, what are some of the traits you're looking for? I mean, what are some of the nuances that you see? You've had a great history of quarterback tutoring.
I always want guys. I want guys that make good decisions and that are accurate. Those are the two first. Never compromise on those. They have to be accurate. They have to make good decisions. And if they can't do that, they can't play. Mm-hmm. And then after that, then you try to get the biggest one, the one with the best feet, the one with the strongest arm, and start adding all that other stuff in there. And with that said, I mean, if you go right through the NFL Hall of Fame, you know, if you consider good decisions, accurate, strong arm, quick feet, fast, none of them have all five of those. But, you know, and then you try to analyze the best you can who does the best job as far as moving the unit. Because I think the most important role that a quarterback has is elevating the play of the people around him. And so then even though that's kind of a not an exact science as you're watching film, you try to get a sense of that, you know, how the team responds to him when they're ahead, how they respond when they're behind. And go from there. But we got some good quarterbacks around here, and so just try to get them better as fast as we can.
Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Coach, I heard a story about the slot spot. The code name for that is Elf. Is that correct, or was it that way? And was it in reference to Wes Welker?
No. What we had was, we put a guy, what was it? We didn't do it for a long time. Our slot guys are just pretty much inside receivers. We did have a set one time called L. and that was to that referenced Eric Morris. And Eric Morris right now is a receiver coach at Texas Tech. Mm. And he played for me, and Eric Morris is even littler than Wes Welker, and we called him the Elf. And I'm trying to think the exact formation, but basically, what was it? I'm trying to think what it was. It was kind of a Dick'em formation, And it was basically in Eric Morris, who would, again, the elf, who actually occasionally would come through the building with an elf costume. He kind of embraced his role as being the elf. To this day, I call him the elf. He wants me to call him Coach Morris, but like elf, he's not, as far as I'm concerned, he's still the elf, so that's just the way it is. And so he can be Coach Morris on his own time, but he's the elf as far as I'm concerned. And I have the utmost respect for him. He's a smart coach, and he's on my staff for a while. Okay, but it was something like he was in the backfield. We direct snap it to him, and then Michael Crabtree was back there too, where we could throw or hand it to Michael Crabtree. And really it was kind of a, it wasn't so elaborate as much as it was a deal that, you know, just the matchup and personnel and everybody somewhere where they're not supposed to be and try to ambush them. We messed with it a little bit, didn't do it a bunch, but, you know, it was kind of fun, loosen things up a little bit.
Mike Leach with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Washington State head coach. His thoughts on Bob Stoops' retirement, Lincoln Riley taking over, and the elf formation. Coach, I've always wondered this, and what's your boat? Did you name your boat? Because I know you like to go down to Key West and relax and go fishing a lot. Someday we'll get down there to fish with you. But did you name it?
My what now?
Your boat.
Well, I don't have a boat.
Okay.
I'm not often down there often enough, and so, you know, boats at this point would be kind of high maintenance for me to keep an eye on. But, you know, there's a lot of locals down there that are literally experts on the water.
Yeah.
That are virtual experts on the water. So I've had the opportunity to fish with some great people, just incredible people. Like, for example, you know, T.J. Ott, who fishes on Wicked Tuna. I've had the chance to fish with him before. You know, so part of it, there's so many experts of fishing down there. I got a guy that, you know, works. I got a little bitty plunge pool, and so, you know, he's owns a pool company or whatever. He's a great fisherman. There's a guy that's a VP at a bank down there that's as good a waterman as I've ever seen. And so I've got some literal experts that I'm lucky enough to have a chance to go with, to show me around, take me around, and go fishing. And so I've got great reference points, great people to learn from, and so I guess I'm still learning. And if I'm ever down there full-time, I'll probably get a boat.
Coach, got to ask you before we say goodbye, best Father's Day gift and worst Father's Day gift you've gotten?
That I've gotten?
Yeah.
Well, the worst, of course, would be a tie or something, and I'm sure I've gotten a tie for Father's Day. And besides the fact it's insanely cliche, it's something I really don't have a genuine interest in wearing. And despite the fact I sometimes have to, it's just regimented, forced uniform item to the point where instead of appreciated, I kind of resent it. Let's see, the best Father's Day gift. You know, some of your gifts like make or create, like if they put a bunch of thought to it, and they, like, especially when they're younger, they're doing a thing where they're covering their mouth and peeking around the corner, and, you know, you can kind of see them trying to organize it. It's so clever, you know, they put a lot of thought behind. I mean, that's really meaningful. That means a lot. I wish I could tell you what you're celebrating as Father's Day. Than we are, but shoot, let me think here. Father's Day gift. I can't even really remember what I got all the time. Yeah, I guess that kind of covers it. I might have gotten something cool, like maybe a gun or a trip or something. I don't know.
Coach, thanks for spending a few minutes with us on Coach Stoops and Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. It's always great to be on. Always good to hear from you guys.
To Rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt, thanks to Coach Mike Leach there. Kranak, got about 60 seconds here. Pretty educational from Coach Leach's point of view. On just Lincoln Riley and Bob Stoops. He enjoyed his time. It was short, but he loved his time down in Norman.
Oh, yeah. And how old was Lincoln Riley when he hired him? Like 7?
I think so.
Something like that. No, let's do the math real quick. That would have been 2001, right?
And Riley got out of Tech in 03. I think he cut him from being a player in that quarterback room, but he was an assistant. So, yeah.
That can't be right. It couldn't be. So 2003 he did?
That's when Lincoln Riley was at Texas Tech as a player.
As a player. No, when was he a coach with him? What year was that?
No, I mean it had to be, cuz how long did Leach, when did he leave Tech? 09, 2010, so, 6 years ago.
Yeah. Jeez. I mean the guy's 33. And he's taking over OU.
He is. Ugh. We'll see. Coming up, Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogels will join us, get his thoughts on the week in college football, some Nebraska topics. And Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, Hail Varsity Radio. Hail Varsity Magazine continues. Hour 2 on the way, and it's presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hour 2 back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak. TJ Hennig is in South Bend.
What's he doing in Notre Dame in
family,
the middle of the summer?
Family.
Yeah, but why? Okay, just in South Bend, so he's not at like Notre Dame.
Actually, he sent us a picture of Touchdown Jesus yesterday. He was on campus for him.
Yeah, I saw that. South Bend is a crap town, by the way. Isn't it? I mean, it really is.
Kranak, like, let's not pretend you or I remember much of being in South Bend in 2000, okay?
I remember enough to know that place sucked. That was a weird city. It's a very weird
city.
We
bring on Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, yay or nay on the South Bend is a little rough.
I actually don't remember the town itself that well either. We kind of, when we went to that game, we kind of dropped in, went to the game, and then we're back out pretty quickly. So I'm afraid I can't add or detract from the conversation.
So the reason you don't remember is much different than the reason we don't remember.
That could be. I did go to that game with Jack Pierce. So
see, good for you. I mean, Kranak, didn't we like live at Linebackers? That was a good bar.
We were there, and then we stayed in like Elkhart, Indiana.
Let's not pretend like we stayed anywhere. It was a camp KOA. All right.
It was a camp KOA in Elkhart. But and they have what are the names of the guys the people that live like pilgrims there?
The Amish.
But it wasn't Amish. It's like some other.
The Mennonites.
It wasn't that either. It's some other sect. Some other group that is all about, look, we're going to wear the hats and the big buckles and we're going to have horses.
Yeah, you about no vehicles. You about crushed Mr. Ed with the minivan.
Wow. Yeah, this right. Is different.
Yeah, it is. So what do you know, Vogues? Interesting week in college football. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It was an interesting week just when you think you're in the height of no college football news. Something like Bob Stoops always seems to come along and shake things up a little bit, but better that than Baylor or something along those lines.
Isn't that timing strange? I think it makes sense that he's stepping aside considering his age. I think it makes sense that you bring in, or not his age, but just, he's been there 18 years. Like, it's not without precedent that somebody in that position would retire and that Riley would come on. But in June, like, I just, it doesn't make, do you think there's something more to it?
I think there definitely could be, because to do it now, I think it's safe to assume that Bob Stoops didn't wake up on Thursday and decide, well, today's the day I'm officially done. You know, he was probably weighing, okay, can I step away? Do I want to step away? But if that's the case, if you've waited that long and it took you until June to decide, I am a little bit surprised. You know, why not just ride out one more season? You got the best quarterback in the Big 12. Oklahoma is going to start the season ranked in the top 10. And, you know, give it one last go. So to do it 90 days before the season starts does certainly raise some eyebrows for me.
Here's my theory. Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. I think there was a bit of, man, this pressure is huge. And it's been that way for 18 years. Do I really want to do it again? My boys are 18. And ever since they've been born, I've been the head coach at Oklahoma. It's time to step back. I've made $5 million a year or $4.5 million a year for a while. It's time for some me time. And honestly, I think there's a couple of factors here. A, do I want to lose another sweet offensive coordinator? Let's go down the list. Kevin Wilson, Mangino, Leach. This would be the fourth in 18 years, because despite getting a $1.3 million bump to that number as a million-dollar coordinator, Lincoln Riley probably would have had an opportunity to be a head coach. They probably talked him out of it last year, honestly, to stick around a second year. Do I want to go into year 19 trying to get another coordinator? And the other side of that is maybe there's a little more love towards Lincoln Riley with the administration than me. Maybe this is just the perfect time. And on top of all of that, I'll be a good guy. I will leave this place way better than I found it. And I'll leave our rookie head coach now a just tremendous senior quarterback. He's not going to have to start over his first year with a new quarterback and have a rocky start. I think all of those things went into it, folks.
Yeah, I can see some of those. But, you know, I'll say this. If Lincoln Riley looks like a very good football coach, he's only 33. But if there was any pressure coming from the administration to let's wrap this up so we can start the Lincoln and Riley era, that's terrible thinking. Just because no matter how sure a thing a guy might look like, you really just never know when it comes time to make a coaching change.
Sorry to interrupt you. I don't think they were ready to move Bob out the door, but I don't think they were far off from a coach in waiting situation.
Right, which also rarely works. I don't think that there was any sort of widespread sentiment there, but you know, it was one of those things that people kind of, when this news happened, when it did, you start to look for those explanations. And I feel like that's one of the first ones that people sort of arrived at, because, well, frankly, it makes sense in this crazy twisted world of college football that some people would feel that way. And if it's the right people who feel that way, well, then all of a sudden you potentially have something there. But I don't think it's particularly wise thinking to end a great coaching era just because you think you got another one waiting in the wings.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. You did some really interesting research on HailVarsity.com where you looked at the Blue Blood programs and you looked at the Blue Bloods being, you know, all-time winningest programs, and then looked at what it takes when a coach steps aside, when a championship coach steps aside, how many coaching hires it takes to get back to that national championship level. And your findings were what?
Yeah, it was all actually residual research, because I had done a bunch of that for a story that's in the yearbook, which we're busy getting off to press. So congrats to Bob Stoops for good timing on that front, for me at least.
He did
There's
well.
Been, yeah. I think, almost 60 coaching changes at the top 10 programs, all-time winning percentage. There's only been four instances where you went from one national title coach to another national title coach, like Devaney to Osborne. So 4 out of 60. Not very often are you – we look at these programs that way, like, oh, well, USC is just going to keep rolling because it's USC. I don't think that's actually the case. Like, coaching matters a lot. It matters more than anything in my mind. And you just – anytime you have to replace a guy of that stature who's proven he can win – yes, with a lot of advantages at most of these programs. It's just, it comes down to basically a coin flip as to whether or not that you're going to have to fire that guy or you're going to build a statue. You know, so I don't know. Maybe that seems about right. To me, when we think about programs of that stature, it seems like a pretty low percentage.
Yeah, and in the average, it's something like, it's 2.1 coaching hires to get back to that level. Is that right?
Yeah. So, you know, Nebraska has made 4 now since Osborne resigned.
Oh, my God. And I can't. I've never even thought of it like that. Like, think about that. 4 coaches since Osborne. Wow.
Yeah.
That was 20 years ago.
Oh, good.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I just never really heard it discussed. So he's the fourth head coach in 20 years. That is nuts.
Yeah,
I've just never thought of it in those terms or discussed that in those terms. That is so Nebraska is actually below average as it relates to blue blood program getting back to the championship level. It should take you 2 coaching hires. It's taking Nebraska 4, and they're still not there.
Yeah, that is true. You know, it's, I don't know. And I think that number, the average number of coaching moves to 2.1, does indicate sort of the power of these programs a little bit. Because what being a historical power gets you essentially is, well, you can command those coaches, first of all, and you're always going to have basically the resources when you see that Rich Rodriguez is not working out of Michigan to pull the trigger and try again. That's where you get a little bit of that back.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, we'll get your thoughts on the yearbook here in a little bit. Wanted to spend a couple of minutes here on Jacob Padilla's story, who leads the Huskers in sacks in 2017. Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or just kind of sitting back, laying in the weeds when it comes to your projection, how big of a factor, good or bad, Nebraska's pass rush can be with this new 3-4?
Probably hanging back in the weeds. I think their sack total will go up, I think, just from a sort of
kinda has
overall
to.
I'm sorry, what's that?
It kind of has to.
Yeah, that, and also just sort of the overall, you know, mentality and approach that Diaco brings, I think, you know, gets you a little bit too. But it's not a defense that is, it's not like Manny Diaz's Miami defense where they really prize negative plays. They're willing to gamble a little bit to get them. Diaco's defense is sort of the opposite of that. You know, it's based on let's not get beat for 20 yards. It doesn't mean it's not aggressive, because the entire mindset is built on, well, you know, you've heard him say it. He talks about defenders all the time, a very literal interpretation of that word. But they're not pursuing those a lot. Like, it matters a lot more to fill your gaps, maintain your rush lane integrity, than to really just turn it up and get after the quarterback. So I don't think Nebraska will be a high sack team, but I think it'll look like Nebraska is probably in the face of the quarterback a lot more often than the numbers might actually say.
How much of that do you think can come from a guy like Mick Stoltenberg, who's gracing the cover of the Hail Varsity yearbook this year?
a little bit, you know, it depends on, he's got a big job there in the middle, as we know with these, you know, 3-4 nose tackles always sort of do. So got to eat up a lot of space. I think Nebraska's best bet in terms of D-line pass rush is probably Carlos Davis, who slid out to that other end spot. Seems to have, I think, kind of the best pass rush moves. If you go back and watch some of those games last year, he flashed that a little bit. And then, of course, you know, as Jacob mentioned in his story, Freedom kind of came busting out of the gates. And since then, you're waiting for him to kind of get back to that pace. So those are probably your top two. Look at those defensive ends, more so than maybe the nose tackle.
Vogues, were you shocked to see the number of hurries Freedom had and where he ranks as a returning edge guy in college football? Jacob had that in his story. Freedom's number two in the country.
Yeah, I was. Having watched and covered all those games, I guess it didn't feel that way to me. So it kind of tells you a little bit about how we talk about sacks all the time, and this was another good point by Jacob there. You know, QB hurries also have quite a bit of value, except against probably some of the most elite quarterbacks you're going to face. Pressure probably matters more than actually getting a guy to the ground, although those negative plays obviously have a benefit too. So I was surprised to see that number from Pro Football Focus, but, you know, we know Freedom has the ability to do it. So now it just kind of comes doing it consistently.
I don't know if you've seen the article from Sam McEwen in the World Herald today, but interview with Luke McNitt and with Tanner Lee. And we've talked a lot about, you know, the program's mentality on big stages, that sort of thing. But one of the quotes from there with Tanner Lee was, you know, it's a big emphasis this year. Accountability is a big emphasis in the offseason. And Lee says, the players realize we've got to be tough, confident as all hell, respect our opponent, but don't be scared of them. And I'm sitting here like, yeah, you're a Division I football program in Nebraska. Yeah, let's not be scared. Do you find that to be telling that Tanner Lee observed a frightened team while he was redshirting?
Yeah, definitely, because especially when you consider Nebraska's sort of historical standing, and maybe, you know, that's part of the issue too. Or choose whatever time span you want over the last 20 or so years. You know, Nebraska's won like a top 30 program instead of a top 10 program. But for the most part, minus the wins and losses, like everything around Nebraska football, the facilities, the stadium, the fan support, all still feels the same. So it could be hard, I guess, theoretically, to have that sort of chip on the shoulder thing that I think you have to have if you're really going to win at the highest level. So I guess I could see that being the case. It's not good, I guess, to hear that your starting quarterback observed that, in his opinion, last year.
And I guess, you know, for all the breakdowns that we do following, you know, debacles like Ohio State, I mean, does it just come down to they were scared? They need to not be. And I think anybody that's competed has been in a situation where at some point you're kind of scared, right? But we're not. Yeah. But then you learn how to get over that and you don't act like that anymore because you get killed when that happens. But is it that simple? I mean, were these guys like just literally scared?
I think it could be, you know, and you probably only have maybe two, three at the most of those games in any given season. I mean, it's tough to look at Nebraska's two trips to Ohio State. The first one, you know, Nebraska was in it for a half, really. The second one, not at all. And just kind of, you didn't feel like they were programs that were on even footing in any sense. Now, I don't think that's probably the case, even though there have been some huge Wisconsin losses when Nebraska and Wisconsin face off.
You know, I'm gonna jump in here real quick, and I don't know that it turned into fear, but I think it was more panic when he didn't make some plays on the defensive side, and then you saw that your offense wasn't going to get it done. I mean, I think the pressure just mounted, missed opportunities, and then I think you just absolutely were looking for cover. I think it turned into fear.
The thing that's weird about it, though, is it's look, Ohio State's a great program, sure, but they struggle against like Indiana. You know, they have sometimes trouble putting Northwestern away. They just crush Nebraska last two times. You know, it's not like. Yes, there's a difference in talent level in the programs, like no doubt, but there's a difference in the talent level against, you know, whoever Ohio State plays usually. And they don't just murder everybody, but Nebraska just gets crushed by them, and it's got to go to mentality.
Yeah, I think it does too, to a large degree. And, you know, part of the problem could be as well is, so a hurdle that, say, Indiana doesn't have to clear is there's no indication that Indiana and Ohio State football have ever been equal. Mm-hmm. So for the Hoosiers going into that game, it becomes very easy for the coach to say, it's like, look, we can play with these guys. Let's go knock them off. You don't have that at Nebraska because historically you shouldn't have to assume that, oh, it's going to take some sort of monumental effort. We're going to have to upset these guys, even though that's realistically what's going on currently.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. That point is right on. The expectation that you need to be in the game and win it. Hail Varsity has been in the game a while. Another yearbook is coming out. The video is there on HailVarsity.com or at HailVarsity on Twitter. Vogues, give us a little tease here. What's coming out here soon? It looks phenomenal. The yearbook with Hail Varsity.
Yeah, almost 200 pages of football talk to help get you through the summer. It will be shipping here shortly, within another week or so, for people. You'll be able to find it on newsstands or you can subscribe. I've mentioned, you know, there's a feature in there that I did on these blue blood programs. What happens to them when they go sort of get lost in the wilderness for a little bit? What brings them back? So did some analysis there. Jacob Padilla, as you mentioned, talking about his story earlier, also looked at sort of the cultural transformation going on with Nebraska's defense. There's a great historical feature from Mike Babcock on Nebraska's quote unquote Magnificent Eight. And then of course the photography, which everyone seems to know us for, was just looking at some of the portraits that Paul Bellinger shot for us. For the yearbook, we just got those done this past week, and they are gorgeous. So, a lot there.
Go ahead.
So just a real quick question on that. I've seen a couple of the photos. I'm just curious, who jumps out in your mind, like most impressive / ridiculous physical specimens that you saw in those portraits on Nebraska's roster?
I was kind of impressed by Edvina Zigbo. There's a photo there where I looked at his arms and I was kind of like, oh, I hadn't noticed that before. And maybe that's a little bit new. Maybe that's a product of this offseason. Trying to think. There's some great Stanley Morgan Jr. photographs. Those are the two that immediately came to mind.
Tyron Ferguson is the one that jumped out to me. His wingspan is probably 9 feet.
And Muhammad Berry a little bit too.
Yeah.
Vogue's Father's Day special, is that still going on?
It is. So you can get all that information on HailVarsity.com. Makes a good gift for the Husker fan in your life.
855-3-HUSKER to subscribe. Vogue's, be good. Thanks for a few minutes this morning, man. Great talking with you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. There he is, thanks, Brandon man. Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Gary Sharp coming up. I can't wait to see the yearbook, Kranak. It is going to be fantastic. And the video diary, behind-the-scenes look with Mick Stoltenberg is something you need to check out also at HailVarsity.com. 7 out of 10, that's too many. The portion of unbuckled vehicle occupants killed in Nebraska on Nebraska roads last year. They've been using their seatbelts at a minimum, 69 out of the 70 alive today. Saving more lives, the goal. In order to do so, 60 law enforcement agencies across the state on the lookout for seatbelt violations this month. Tickets will be issued. And a reminder, you to buckle that safety belt and make sure the child restraint is in order. Click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. A quick timeout. More college football thoughts. Thoughts on Nebraska. Gary Sharp next on Hail Varsity Radio.
now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning, bless his heart, is in South Bend on the campus of Notre Dame. You know who I miss? I miss Beano Cook. I know Beano's been gone for a while, but
whoa, where did that come from?
Because I have a drop from Beano. He'd come on the show once a year. And he'd always go, Notre Dame. I mean, and Gary Sharp joins us, the Iron Horse. Sharpie, you can attest to this. When Beano'd answer his phone, he'd always answer, Lieutenant Colombo. That's how he'd answer his phone. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, he didn't want anybody. First of all, he'd ask how you got his number. But yeah, he'd answer like that. He was a treasure. That is, I did not expect on my Hail Varsity Radio bingo card, a Beano Cook reference.
Well, I just thought about it because of Ron Paulus, Notre Dame, and he always had a way about saying Notre Dame, and that's where TJ Henning's at right now.
Well, is he committing, or is he like on a visit, or what's he doing here? I thought he was verbally committed to Nebraska.
Oh, he's signed. He's not leaving the studios ever again. The way things have gone this morning. Sharpie, what do you know, man? How you been? And it's been a kind of a crazy week. Let's start with, it's been a week, but since we've talked to you, but you're kind of final thoughts on Nebraska baseball. We alluded to it last week, how rough it would be if they went 0-2, and there was some poison by the vocal minority early in the week. And you know, Nebraska, good for them, they got to the postseason. They'll try and regroup. What's kind of your take on the season?
Well, it's disappointing. You know, in the span of 2 weeks, you went from winning the regular season in the Big Ten to being 2 in the queue and never having a lead. So it's definitely disappointing. I mean, it's just kind of a letdown that Nebraska, after getting hot, just kind of couldn't get it going in Bloomington or in Corvallis. And, and baseball is a cruel sport. You get what you deserve. And if, you know, you don't come to play, you're going to get the result that you got last weekend. I think, you know, as Nebraska now looks ahead and, you know, you pay particular attention to Tuesday and Wednesday of the Major League Baseball draft, guys like Schreiber, Alvarado, Myers, if they will be returning, I think Jake Myers will return. I think the other two, there's a pretty good chance that they will move on and get the opportunity to play professional baseball. But whoever is coming back to Nebraska, and you know you have a nice core of upperclassmen that are going to be in your lineup, I think moving forward, recruiting, putting the pieces together for 18, 19, and on into the future, I think Nebraska has to zero in on a big-time Friday night starter. Everybody uses Shane Comey as an example, and those are very rare to get in any program. But I think Nebraska's got to have a Friday night lockdown guy and then, kind of establish a way that they want to play offensively. If they want to play small ball, then you build your club that way and you teach your team that. If you want to hit the three-run homer, then you recruit to that way. So I think they need to narrow down on a focus offensively, grab a big-time Friday night guy, and then roll the dice and move forward and hope that the Big Ten prepares you for the NCAA tournament.
Gary Sharp with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Gary, I just tweeted to see if you were scared, like apparently Nebraska's football team was last year, according to Tanner Lee in an article in the Omaha World Herald, that offseason accountability is a very important thing. And he says, hey, we need to be confident as all hell, respect our opponent, but don't be scared of them. Is that a bit of an alarming quote to you too, or is that just me?
Well, I don't know, it's if a current player, and this is not to take away from Tanner Lee's observations, but if a current player that was on last year's roster that had an integral part said that, I would be very, very alarmed. I think that's an observation from Tanner Lee kind of from the outside, as maybe the prep to the week and then, you know, not being in the locker room and ready to go on Saturday with the rest of the guys that were playing in that game. I think whether you use the word scared, whatever you use, you know, Nebraska, I don't think Nebraska's scared of anybody. I think Nebraska, we've gone through a little stretch here with upperclassmen that not all of them know how to win, what it takes to win. The culture of winning, you know, you just do enough and you'll get a victory. Well, we've seen against the likes of Wisconsin's and Ohio State's and Iowa's and so on and so forth, the teams that you've struggled with the last few years, is it's not just show up and play. I mean, you got to find a way to win. I'm very interested to see when we get through the cycle of summer conditioning, what the end of July when camp starts, what guys not only look like physically and mentally, because we've heard, I think, a lot more in the off season about the mental approach on getting right and, you know, on the heels of Tanner Lee saying that, getting right and respecting our opponent, but not being to the point that you are, quote unquote, I guess scared. But it's good to hear, like, a guy like Tanner Lee has just taken, I don't think being the fishbowl of the quarterback in Nebraska will faze him one bit. His demeanor is going to be perfect for what he's about to encounter for this year and hopefully another year.
Gary Sharp is with us, Hale Varsity Radio, the Iron Horse. Sharpie, in this instance, it's good to have an outsider say what he said. And he's been doing the scout team thing, but he's not, he's new to Nebraska. So his observations, I think, are A, refreshing, and B, good for him being able to say it, because it's what he thought. It was the impression he gave, and maybe it serves as a wake-up call, or just kind of a negative call-out, but just a statement saying, look, this is where Nebraska needs to go. You can't be this way. You're not supposed to be this way. I think...
Well, are we talking, you know, if you want to... See, I hate the word scared. I'm going to say that he maybe was alluding to not a lot of confidence in particular games where... You know, you don't have a lot of confidence. Maybe you appear to be scared. And I would be more on the side of, I think there were some guys, whether they be players or coaches in some of the games last year, that walked onto the field and didn't have a ton of confidence that what they were about to present was going to work in that particular game.
Mm. Yeah. Ohio State jumps to mind, huh?
Man. I don't think Nebraska would have beaten Ohio State. I think if they would have won the week before, that Wisconsin loss, that beat Nebraska in Columbus. Now, it didn't beat them by 59 points, but I think it beat them. Once they didn't beat Wisconsin, guys, I think it kind of got off the rails a little bit because they put so much into that game. And to lose that game, I think that hung around with them for the rest of the season.
Gary, do you have a sense? It's interesting. We've read about what Chris Mortensen and what the Mannings have said about Tanner Lee. And then now George Whitfield, a quarterback guru, saying similar things. Just, I mean, the amount of praise that this guy is getting from seemingly quarterback experts, it's crazy. I mean, it's pretty like we've never heard these kinds of words spoken about a Nebraska quarterback. Are you expecting him this year to deliver and live up to that ability that he has? So I'm talking about a potential all-conference type season, because that's the way they're making him out to be, but he's yet to take a snap here.
I think he will be exactly what Nebraska needs for this offense. Does that mean he's an NFL guy? Still remains to be seen, but I think I saw enough, Mark, during spring football that the throws that Nebraska needs to be successful and what Danny Langsdorf's vision is for Nebraska's offense, Tanner Lee can make those throws. And I'm not a quarterback guru, but I tell people this all the time. The thing that was refreshing to see about Tanner Lee, and again, I think there's more than just your arm and your legs. I think there's the mental part, and I think he's got the demeanor to, as I mentioned, handle being a quarterback. I think he has a great relationship with his offensive coordinator. They speak the same language, so that when they talk to each other, that goes from the meeting room onto the playing field where, you know, Tommy and Danny were together. They were new to each other, and they were not speaking the same language on a daily basis. But in my opinion, this is what I'm excited about Tanner Lee, and it comes down to a simple thing I observed during the spring. He could play catch with a wide receiver. And I use this because Christian Hackenberg got just crushed by the New York media the other day that they had an open-to-the-media OTAs. And Hackenberg, just trying to play catch, was hitting media members. I watched Tanner Lee play simple catch, 10 yards apart, throw into a wide receiver, and the wide receiver never had a move. I mean, the pass was zip, 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 zip. And that's just a small thing that I think it shows you Tanner Lee is accurate, takes, you know, that was a big thing to me. So I think he will be very good for Nebraska. I'm not ready to go over the top and say, man, this is a guy that could carry Nebraska to the promised land. But if he can just throw 62-63% completion percentage and your yards per attempt is up a little bit, then I think Nebraska has a really good chance to add about 2 wins to their season total, because if you go back last couple of years, you could say that poor quarterback play cost Nebraska a couple games. There is no better evidence than that than the 2 games against Wisconsin. If Nebraska has better quarterback play against Wisconsin the last 2 years, they're 2-0 against the Buckeyes or the Badgers, instead of being 0-2 by small margins.
Sharpie, if you get better quarterback play and you get wins against Wisconsin instead of heartbreak, does that pay it forward to better performances in games against Ohio State? Because we're talking about learning how to win. Wisconsin is, I think, seen as one of those programs you got to take down, much like Ohio State. And Wisconsin's getting closer the last few years to having that type of national reputation. They're not Ohio State, but they're not far off. If you beat one of those bigger dogs, maybe you're better off in another big game. Do you think it kind of flows that way?
Well, the bottom line is you're 0-4 against the two teams that the 2 years you've been in Lincoln have won the division, Iowa and Wisconsin. So somehow there you have to find a way to beat Wisconsin and Iowa. And that's what, when you look at win totals and people say 9, you're figuring, okay, there's 3 losses in there. Are you saying you're going to beat Wisconsin and Iowa and then split with Ohio State, Penn State? First and foremost, it's the division. You have to find a way to do work in your division, and you have to find a way to beat the two teams that have been above you the last 2 years, in Wisconsin and Iowa. And I think if you go back in those 4 football games, just a simple play here or there, or a series of simple plays from the quarterback position, you know, it's a different story. You're not 0-4. Maybe you're 2-2. Maybe you're 3-1. Who knows? But I think the stability of Tanner Lee will help this offense a lot, so it won't be so skittish. But I know what people are saying right now, and you guys would say this, and I would too. It all comes down to the offensive line. If the offensive line can give Tanner Lee a little bit of time, then he'll be able to work his magic. But also, there's another narrative that'll be out there that Tanner Lee is a statue. Tanner Lee can run. Not Tommy Armstrong running, but Tanner Lee's not just going to stand there and absorb a sack after sack. He will be able to get out and run a little bit like we saw briefly during the spring.
So a little bit more athletic than, say, like a Zach Taylor.
You know what? He's the comparison that they do a lot to. I would say yes. I would say if he has to get out and scramble, he won't have a problem. Again, don't compare him to Tommy Armstrong, but don't compare him to just the prototypical dropback quarterback that can't run. He'll tuck it in and run a little bit. And he's very savvy. We watched him a couple times that he had to do that during scrimmages, Mark, where he knows where the sticks are as well. And he has perfected, by the way, the pop-up slide as a quarterback.
He looks like he's going into second. He does a nice job. Sharpie, a thought on Bob Stoops before we say goodbye.
It's amazing what a career, 190 wins during that same time. Nebraska won 157. I always liked him because he embraced the Oklahoma-Nebraska rivalry in the brief time that he got to be a part of it, with Nebraska being in the Big 12. But through all of that, I think you have to break up his career to the early part and then the latter part. Now, he did evolve. He went from being a defensive guy to the way the Big 12 was going with offense. But it is amazing when you look at his career and how successful it was. Only 1 national title, and a lot of Oklahoma people will say he took the guys that John Blake had left for him and elevated them to another level. He's going into the College Football Hall of Fame, but he's not in the level of some of the greats in college football. I personally don't think he'll coach again. I stand up and applaud him because he told everybody that my life doesn't have to revolve around football. And today, those coaches, man, do they even have families? Because they are on the job all the time. But he went with his gut and said, I'm stepping down. Lincoln Riley, I think, will be perfect. If you trust Joe Castiglione and what he's done with that athletic department, you'll trust that he has faith in Lincoln Riley. And look, it worked out for Wilkinson, Switzer, and Stoops. They were in their 30s with little or no head coaching experience, and they worked out well. Just like, you know, Stoops and Osborne were about the same age when they are, or Stoops and Riley were about the same age when they started their career. So it'll be fascinating in OU. And I also think, guys, I think it wore on him, probably some of the off-the-field stuff.
Yeah.
But also, he carried the Big 12 for the last 7 years.
Yeah.
Oklahoma did. And the instability of the Big 12, I'm sure all of these added to his decision to step down. He'll be missed in college football, definitely. But we'll see if Oklahoma can keep going with Lincoln Riley. You know, keep up their recruiting. They're going to have to turn it up a notch with Tom Herman now in the Big 12.
Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, thanks for a few minutes, man. It was great to catch up. We'll talk soon. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Stay cool today.
Will do. Try to.
Yeah, don't be scared, man. Don't be scared.
It's confidence, Kranak. There we go. Thanks to Gary Sharp with us. A quick timeout. We'll continue on as Hail Varsity Radio moves forward, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Winding down a Saturday, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Mark Kranak, Chris Schmidt, thanks to Gary Sharp. Thank you to Brandon Vogel. Many thanks to Coach Mike Leach earlier on the Rewind. And a reminder to you, Father's Day specials going on with Hail Varsity Magazine. And, of course, a chance for you to get caught up with HailVarsity.com. Amazing message board. Tremendous message board community. Inside info on recruiting. Analysis with Brandon Vogel. Breaking news. And, of course, the best premium content when you sign up today. HailVarsity.com/subscribe. 30-day free trial offer. If you want to do that. So the magazine, the website, it sounds to me like you can treat yourself or hint to the kids or mama about where you want to go for Father's Day, and that's to HailVarsity.com. Kranak, what's on the docket for you today?
But you know, it's great. There are no soccer games. There's no anything, which is just beautiful. You know what I mean? When you got the kids and you got to tote them all around, I'm sure you still got baseball working.
Right? Well, I'm missing game one. Baseball's probably in the second inning. There's another game at 10, and then there's one at 2 today. So
how many games your boy playing?
He is doing four to six a weekend.
4 to 6, but I mean total, like the season. Have you counted it up? Like how many games he's actually playing?
He started in April. He'll probably do shy of 50.
Jeez,
barely.
Yeah, and he's how old?
He's 10.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, but he's got a great group, great coaches, good team. They've been together for 2 years. Yeah. They're getting better, and you know what? I mean, he can't work. I can't send him to work.
No, totally. He should.
He'll play baseball. He's doing basketball camps. So no, I mean, that's what kids are doing now. It's either he's playing, with his buddies on Xbox where they're all over the city of Lincoln, tapped in, racing each other, some racing game they have, which is cool. Or they're at practice, or they're at a basketball camp, or they're playing baseball. So that's kind of a new normal for a lot of us, and that's better than the alternative. He could be crushing ice cream and Cheetos.
Yeah, or selling drugs.
Right.
You know? Which is a good thing he's not doing that.
Thank you. I was going the obese angle, and you're going with the juvenile delinquent angle.
Right. Well, it's good. Well, which could lead to eating a lot of Cheetos. Right? Depending on if he gets high on his own supply. But he's 10, and he's not doing that, and that's good.
Yeah, right.
So keep him in baseball.
we can just learn tobacco use and gambling in baseball.
Right, exactly. I'm just
the lesser
just
of many
that.
Lesser of many evils. What I'm
He's like,
telling.
Dad, I'll go with the red man now. I don't need the big league chew.
No, and
not falling for that crap anymore.
Not at all. Yeah. Not at all. So busy week ahead. We're getting closer to more recruiting news as Friday Night Lights will
Oh, yeah.
Be done, at least session one, when we talk next week.
That's going to be
Nebraska's been doing the satellite camp thing this week, and they've been doing a great job at it in Missouri, St. Louis area yesterday, in California this weekend, and plenty of offers. Lots of thoughts on the 2019 quarterback search. So we'll keep you posted on that. Keep it with HailVarsity.com.
Max Duggan out of Lewis Central.
Yeah, yeah. I know we talked about him, and 6'1", kind of a, from a size standpoint, a McSorley type dude. Very athletic, and that kid plays a ton of sports. So, yeah, I mean, Nebraska's got to keep working because he's an Iowa guy. So,
yeah, his dad, the head coach at Lewis Central, and great guy.
Yeah.
Great guy. And you know what? Demeanor wise, almost exactly like Danny Langsdorf, his dad is.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that'll factor in when Max talks to Danny Langsdorf, it's going to feel familiar to him. They're very similar personality types. It's got to bode well for Nebraska. Assuming he likes his dad, which everybody does.
Yeah.
Honestly, he's one of those, he's a very likable dude. So Nebraska's got a shot there, and the kid is legit.
Kranak, we will run you down next week. Thanks for a few minutes today, bud, or 2 hours worth.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Good job running the board.
Hey, take care. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity. Back at you next time, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.